It is my pleasure to welcome our good friend Kirk into the program, our resident scholar and teacher on all things Hebrew graphics.
Well, that's not true, but I appreciate it. Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. We're going to pick right up where we left off 2 days ago, because yesterday was primarily conversation, a lot of it on the dimensions and where Yahweh is taking us. But he's only going to take those who observe what he has to say. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing more important to observe than the covenant. So as we read back through this and then consider the words that comprise this statement, I would like you to tell me if you think it is possible that someone claiming to speak for God can be telling the truth when they say that circumcision is counterproductive, or that they can be telling the truth when they say that circumcision and the covenant that it represents enslaves and is counterproductive. The speaker here is Yahweh. And he says, this one and only, I guess that is going to undermine the first part, isn't it? Can't have a New Testament if you've only got one and only covenant. All right, this one and only family-oriented covenant relationship of mine, Yahweh's the speaker.
Mm-hmm.
So whose family is it?
It's his family.
There you go. Which relationally and beneficially, Asher, you should always and continuously observe. That was written in the imperfect. Forever and ever, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ongoing behavior.
Ongoing. Never stops.
Right. If it had a terminus, Yahweh would have to have written it in the perfect, wouldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Even if the terminus was, this was written 1400 BCE, even if the terminus was 33 CE, when Paul claims having a date fixed which the behavior is no longer advantageous would require it to have been written in the perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So, from a grammatic point of view, Yahweh has completely undermined the basis of Pauline doctrine by ascribing the perfect to this.
You have no argument anymore.
Now, if you're a Christian, you say, oh, come on, you're not going to undermine my religion based upon a point of grammar. Well, who's the speaker?
Yeah.
Who's the speaker? So you're saying that the grammar of that Yahweh's grammar is flawed? Is that the where you want to hang your hat if you're a Christian and say, well, this imperfect conjugation, it means that we should observe forever and ever his one and only covenant. Wow, just think about that. He just says, observe forever and ever my one and only covenant. How are you going to be rational and be a Christian under that basis?
You have to change the subject.
You have to change the subject, won't you? Yeah, absolutely. He said, forever and ever, for all time, imperfect, observe this one and only covenant of mine. You can't have a new one then.
No.
You can't take your eyes off of this one.
Exactly.
You can't view this as a negative, as Paul does, and view God as a positive.
No. The only debate option I have now is to attack you for saying it.
That's right. Yeah, you can use rational fallacy.
Yeah.
Debate fallacy, which is that would be ad hominem.
Uh-huh.
Which is to attack the messenger because because if you want to attack the message, then you're going to be just like Paul.
Uh-huh.
You're going to claim to speak for God while you're assailing what God has to say.
Yeah.
And that won't fly.
This whole thing, I came in late last night, as I do on Tuesdays, and I kind of stayed up a little while, and I opened up questioning Paul, and I started just reading, I didn't read the commentary. I just read as many verses as I could up until I got to the circumcision part where he's with Peter. And it's like, you know, there's no defense to this. If I was trying to debate it, if you look at it just coldly and hardly, is nothing you can, it's so disgusting, number one, that should hit you as you read it. And the second part is there's absolutely no way that you could defend it and make any sense of it. And you certainly couldn't plead on the grammar side of it. And Paul's grammar is
hellacious.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Right. It's hellacious.
It takes hundreds of rewrites to get it where you can even read it.
Right. Yeah, the notion that the Christian New Testament is word for word inspired for God and is inerrant.
Mm-hmm.
Not only are Paul's letters anti-God, so they're not inspired by God, they're opposed to God.
Right.
And not only does Paul admit that he was demon-possessed, which means that's the inspiration for his letters,
right,
but the reality is that Paul's writing is so abysmal that it's impossible to convey it literally without making Paul look like the ultimate moron.
Mm-hmm.
But do you happen to have some of that available where you can actually share what Paul had to say about circumcision? Because Yahweh is about to tell us right here. In fact, I'll go ahead and read the rest of this and we'll compare it while you're looking at what Paul had to say. That Yahweh is not only telling you to continually and always observe the one and only covenant of his, which is Pauline doctrine now is completely toast at that point. But he goes on to say that the purpose of observation is to lead to making connections which yield understanding between God and ourselves. And then he says that this is something that you should do for all generations, in all places, for all time. But then he says, and the thing that's going to help you remember this, the circumcision.
Right. And so, I mean, you just really don't have any options here. I mean, to eat.
No, there aren't any. Well, you do. You have an option. Your option is you can either accept what Yahweh is laying down as a condition for being part of his covenant family, which is to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant, and if you're a man being circumcised, you can either, and that's the sign of the covenant, you can either accept what Yahweh says and be part of his family, or you can reject it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't change it.
No, you can't make his statement be different to fit your needs of whatever your desires are.
Right. You can't say that there's a new testament, a new covenant. You can't say that circumcision is counterproductive. You can't say that circumcision is of the flesh and therefore evil, and that the Torah therefore is evil and is of the flesh, and the covenant that is spoken of in the Torah is therefore enslaving. You can't say that and claim to speak for God.
Yeah.
You can say that, but when you do, you're opposed to God.
So you invent a new God.
That's correct. And you'll guess who Paul's God is.
Well, he's Satan's God. He's Satan, but he comes in the disguise of the Messiah, which he ain't.
You know, what I actually think happens with Hasatan, mm-hmm. while he recognizes that he's worshipped as God when he possesses and influences the likes of Paul and the likes of Muhammad,
mm-hmm.
I think he twists his perpetrators such that Muhammad and Paul are often mistaken as gods, and that in their own twisted mind they both get such aggrandized egos because they view themselves as gods, and that their word is God's testimony.
Yeah. Doesn't the Pope?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's that his words are God's words.
Mm-hmm.
And that Paul and Muhammad were both advocates of the notion, perverted notion, that their words were God's words. And so if your words are God's words, then you are part God, right?
Yeah, you're just an extension of.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's why Satan possessed Paul, was to keep that ego in check so that Paul would reference a Lord apart from himself.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was Satan that wanted to be worshipped as God. Satan didn't want Paul worshipped as God.
No. But he'll take what he can get.
This one and only family-oriented covenant relationship of mine, which relationally and beneficially you should actually and continuously observe between me for the purpose of coming to know and understand me, and between you to cause you to be aware and make connections, between your offspring following you, your Zerah, your seed, is for you to actually circumcise accordingly your 1 in 10, your occasional male for them to remember. Oh, no, it says Cole. All means all. That's all means.
Mm-hmm.
Cole, your every male. Door is what precedes it. Door means all places, all generations, all people, that you actually circumcise accordingly, your every male, for them to remember. I think we talked about Zakar previously. That was that interesting word that Yahweh chose for male.
Yes.
And what is the Zakar is based upon, the noun Zakar, is based upon a verb. And the verb is written Zakar. That's how we know that the noun is based on a verb, that the verb is written Zakar.
Mm-hmm.
Same way as the noun. What does the verb mean? You know?
Inheritance, or wait a minute.
No, the verb actually means to remember.
Oh, Zakar means to remember. It's memorial is what I'm, yeah.
Right, memorialize, remember.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, do you think maybe there's a reason, since Enosh would mean mortal man, and Adam would mean the man, and Ish would mean the individual, do you think that under those circumstances that there's a reason that Yahweh chose Zakar?
Absolutely.
Based on his verbal root.
Right.
That this sign of the covenant, circumcision, is designed to help us remember that we've signed this agreement. We're part of the family. We'll be back. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Kirk, before you share what Paul said regarding circumcision, in this text we've just read from Yahweh, which comes from the not only the Torah, it's the first book of the Torah. It's pretty hard to miss. I mean, if you're going to read the Torah, you're 17 chapters into the Torah. 17:10 is where this came from.
Right.
Did God tell you to go to a religious person and thoughtlessly but religiously, in all good faith, have your ding-a-ling trimmed?
No. Didn't tell you how much, didn't tell you how to do it. I mean, or where you have to go. Yes.
No, but he did precede the circumcision with a verb, and not only in this sentence, but in the previous sentence. What was the thing that has to precede circumcision for circumcision to have any merit?
Well, you had to agree to the terms and conditions to begin with and walk away, and it's still 5 terms.
Yeah, didn't Yahweh use the verb shamar in this sentence and the previous one?
Yeah,
observe. Yeah. Observe. So,
well, the Torah also has the observe in it.
Right, so isn't this statement from the Torah and the sentence that preceded it, which the active verb and the first verb in both was shamar, observe, which is to closely examine and carefully consider. Then circumcision is an act that is valid, that has merit, that is useful in the context of observation. Observation comes first, circumcision comes second.
Right, exactly.
And so if you were to be circumcised or to circumcise a son prior to observation, to closely examining, carefully considering, you would not be following Yahweh's instructions, his guidance.
No, it would be true, yeah.
So what he wants is for you to observe first, to you closely examine and carefully consider first, so that you come to understand, he had even had Bien here three times, to understand before circumcision, because circumcision doesn't mean anything unless you understand why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. None of this does.
I mean, that's correct.
The whole point is that you understand what you're getting into. I mean, you read the contract. Then you sign the contract.
Right. So why don't you share with a few lines from Paul, if you would, about circumcision. Since we know what Yahweh's point of view is, it's the sign that helps you remember once you closely examine, carefully consider, and come to understand.
Well, there was a couple of things that I just ran across, and then I started reading Masal or Proverbs, you know, 3:1. And these are not heavy duty things, but it was just where circumcision came up, and of course he's defending himself when he says, to the contrary, not even Titus, a Greek being, was compelled to be circumcised, which is erroneous because no one was going to compel him to do it anyway. It's always free will and free choice.
Right.
But you know, he's defending that, as he's trying to twist that as if that was some authorization for him to carry on. And then a little bit later down the road, we find him in his Galatian letter, what I think he says, contrariwise, nevertheless, having seen and perceived that because I have been believed with the healing message and the beneficial messenger of the uncircumcised, inasmuch as Petros or Peter was the circumcised, was of the circumcised. Well, that's total nonsense. I mean, that's a contradiction to everything you just read.
Yeah, so what he's saying is that he is the messenger.
Mm-hmm.
For the uncircumcised.
For the uncircumcised, right.
Are there any uncircumcised men part in Yahweh's covenant?
Not according to Yahweh. That's the only one that matters.
So he was the messenger for the not covenant.
Yeah, or the Torahless ones.
Or he was the messenger for the not God, since God says, I only got one family.
Yeah, it's the other family.
So so he's saying that Peter, who is Shimon Kefesh, that Shimon was the messenger for the participants in the covenant, the circumcised, and he was the messenger for the not participants in the covenant, the uncircumcised.
So he drew the line in the sand. In the
sand. Just perfect. I mean, that's, by the way, it's true. Paul is the messenger for the uncircumcised. Paul is the messenger for those who have not observed the Torah, who have not observed the covenant, who have chosen to exclude themselves from God's family.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty heavy, isn't it?
Ooh. What did Yahweh say in his Torah about benefiting from Passover if you're uncircumcised?
He said, well, you won't.
You won't. Don't do it.
Because it's nothing but it compounds it. It makes it even worse.
So Paul is the messenger of those who cannot become immortal. What did Yahweh say in Ezekiel about uncircumcised men entering his family?
They won't
entering
do
his
it.
Home.
They can't enter.
Not going to allow it. Not ever. And not saying ever. That they can is a grievous lie, is what Yahweh said.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, so Paul is the liar to those who have been deceived. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. So how does one square the notion that Paul admits that he is the messenger to the uncircumcised with the reality that Yahweh says that every male must be circumcised if they're going to participate in his covenant family?
You can't. You literally can't. You have to change all the writing to suit the religion so that and you have to hide it.
Yes. You have to be a hypocrite. You have to be irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Either that or you have to be ignorant. You have to be unaware of this conflict.
Mm-hmm. Or just avoid the subject altogether.
Right.
I mean, you just preach on something else.
Okay, and then when somebody brings it up, like we're bringing it up, then what do you do?
Hey, well, you say that's the old thing that only applied to the Jews.
But that's not what Yahweh said here.
No, No.
He said it was for, he didn't say it was a Jewish covenant. He said it was his covenant.
My covenant, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't say that it was for a particular period of time. He said it was for all time. He didn't say it was for some people. He said it was for all people.
Yeah, but you're trying to be rational.
I'm just trying to read what the man.
You're honestly referring
to himself as an individual. I'm just trying to read what the man wrote.
Yeah, how dare you report what he said exactly? I mean, that's just not in the spirit of these conversations.
That's not. Don't let the evidence get in the way of our opinions. So what do you think, Kirk?
Just reinforces the decision to is how easy it is to walk away from it once you understand what you're walking away from. Now, the downside is just walk away from something because you find somebody lying to you doesn't mean you're walking, that you're necessarily going to walk into the right thing. But here is what, if you allow me to read just for a second, I'm only going to do one and two of Masal, which is Proverbs.
Yeah.
And he says, and when I say mitzvah, think terms and conditions, which is one of which is circumcision. It says, right. My son, never ignore, overlook, nor forget, never lose sight of the significance of, or never inappropriately respond to my Torah, my teaching, guidance, and directions, and my mitzvah, which are the terms and the conditions, choose to let him preserve and protect you. He's talking to himself or the spirit. Allowing him to watch over, guard, spare, restore, and save your heart, your source of life, your inner nature, your character, emotions, and the feelings, and your capacity to love and to choose, for elongating your days and for renewing and transforming lives. And peace, favor, well-being, reconciliation, and salvation, they will continue to bring to you. Well, and here's your choice.
There's your choice, my son.
Boy, that Torah stuff, that'll just kill you, won't it? I mean, who's kidding who?
Yeah, he says, never lose sight of my Torah, because it is the source of restoration, of redemption.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Yahweh's testimony is consistent all the way through. And we're going to go to Diane and get her question here in a moment. But mitzvah, the word that you translated, actually you're reading a translation I prepared, of terms and conditions of the covenant, mitzvah. It begins with a mem.
Mm-hmm.
Cleansing. Life-giving.
And life-giving, yes.
The TS sound comes next. Isn't that the signpost along the way?
That's the signpost along the way, right. Exactly.
The basis of Zion is it's that TS sign. It's also you find the TS in Eretz, the Promised Land.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The Promised Land is the signature mark. Doorway. It's the doorway. And,
right.
I know it's the T. That's the pole, but they're very similar in the TS.
Yeah. So it's the life giving and cleansing. Of the signposts along the way. That's the mitz.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the wall, which is the found in Yahweh's name, the wall, which is the tent peg.
It gives you security and it increases and adds on to the family, adds on to your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an additional.
Right. All about bonus, about gaining something. And then that's followed, of course, by the hay.
The hay, which is the engaged, upright individual.
So if you are an observant person who is engaged and reaching up to Yahweh, and you're going to be increased, you're going to be made secure in his home, which is the tent peg, and you'll notice the signposts along the way, and so you'll follow the way to extended life and to cleansing.
All right.
Mitzvah. We have Diane on the line. I'd love to hear what this question. I think it's something about a Greek title. Hello, Diane. Diane. No, Diane's been on hold for a while, and she may not know that we've come to her here. But I'll let Scott check on her, and we'll get back to her when we know if she's around. I think her question was really on the basis of the Greek title. Okay. Go ahead, Nadine. I won't put words in your mouth. I'll let you ask your own question.
I wanted to know if you would explain again the difference between Christos and Christis.
Yeah. Yeah. The first of all, we're talking about Greek, so it's not inspired. And it's and if it's in something that Yahweh said through Yosha, then he was speaking Hebrew, and it was translated into Greek, so the Greek becomes irrelevant. And if it's in someone else's voice, it's irrelevant because they weren't inspired by Yahweh. But nonetheless, there is a difference in the two words. In the 70 manuscripts now that have been unearthed that covered part of the so-called Christian New Testament, in 100% of those that predate Constantine in the time that the text was became a scribe's folly, where a scribe could write really anything they wanted to. They, you know, they could harmonize the text, they could change the words and to suit the religion. But prior to Constantine, we have 70 manuscripts. On those 70 manuscripts, 100% of the time that you will read in an English Bible Christ, there was a placeholder in the Greek and not a word written out. So Christ is not a translation of what is written in the Greek. It is an erroneous extrapolation. There is a placeholder, and the placeholders represent the placeholders that were used in the Septuagint as the Septuagint tried to translate the Hebrew, and they became prevalent because the Greek alphabet does not have the letters to properly convey the sound of Yahweh and Yahusha. So they use placeholders to tell you where to look. Now, so now it becomes a question as to what word do the placeholders represent? Christos, the basis of Christos, Rx is the same things you will see Cairo at drugstores. You know, it's a sign of a drugstore. The word Christo means to be drugged, to apply drugs. It's a horrible word to base the name or title of the diminished manifestation of God. It means to drug or to be drugged, Christos. But we have two independent Roman historians, one at the time of Nero, which was, you know, around the 90 CE, so fairly contemporaneous. But two Roman historians, both that document the existence of a Yahud, whose followers accepted the name of Christoanios, and they applied the title to him of Christos. And Christus versus Christos, where the verbs are supplied by different, the vowels are supplied by entirely different letters. So there's two different letters. Both vowels are replaced between Christos and Christus. And Christus. It's an E versus an I and an us and a U versus an O. We know what the basis of Christos, which became Christ, is, which is drugged. But Christos, or Christus, I should say, C-R-E-S-T-U-S, means an able servant, good and useful servant, an implement that is able to do the task at hand and perform it well. And so, therefore, the term that was used by the historians, where they actually wrote it out 100 years before it was written out by post-Constantine Christians. So 100 years before we see it written out by Christians, we see it written out by Roman historians, and they say it was Christus, which means that he was given a Greek word which more accurately conveys the message of Messiah. Messiah is the implement doing the work of Yah. And Christus would be a useful implement, a good servant performing as is required. And so Christus, as it was written out by Roman historians 100 years before Christians attempted to write out the placeholder, is an appropriate translation of Messiah, where Christos, being based on on Chrysos is means drugged and is wholly inappropriate. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, it's one of the great misnomers of Christianity that Diane brought up here. Is not only isn't Christ a last name as in Jesus Christ, and not only did Yosha not have a Greek title or a Greek name, he was Hebrew. He never spoke Greek, only spoke Hebrew, perhaps also some Aramaic, but Aramaic and Hebrew were extraordinarily similar languages. That to apply a term to him like Christ is to say, I am really stupid. I am unaware that there no word even remotely akin to Christ written out in any of the first, second, or third century extant manuscripts of what's called the Christian New Testament. And that the word is based on a word which means drugged. In fact, Kirk, you may be aware of this, that in Revelation, which is one of maybe two or three books in the Christian New Testament that if treated properly, has merit. Yao Kan and Matan Ya have merit if treated properly. And Luke does if treated with extreme caution, but so does Revelation. And in Revelation, Yosha uses the basis of Christ, Christos, to speak of applying a medical remedy, a drug, to one's eyes. And he associates it with the Laodiceans.
Yeah.
Healthcare. Relying on healthcare as opposed to him. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Kirk.
Revelations?
The Revelation story about Yosha explaining, using the basis of Christ, of Christos, as a verb to say that the Laodiceans have become reliant on healthcare products, eye salves in this particular case, and implying them as a drug, which is what the verb basis of Christ means, have become drugged and dependent upon drugs and their healthcare, as opposed to him. He says, I recommend that you rely on me as opposed to relying on your healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
What have Americans done?
Well, we're very much relying on our healthcare.
Yeah. As opposed to him.
Yeah, it's nothing wrong with health care, but I mean, that ain't the big issue in life.
No, it's just that we are so dependent upon human institutions,
yeah,
and so willing to be dependent on human institutions as opposed to being dependent on Yahweh. The reason Yahweh wants us to walk away from human institutions, why he says to walk away from Babel, from confusion, from your country, is because of two factors. One is, as our Father, as the Father of the one and only covenant, he wants us to rely on him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to split loyalties. You can't say, well, I'm going to rely on God for this thing, but I'm going to rely on man for those things.
Yeah.
And he also wants us to know that human institutions are rotten. They're not trustworthy.
Yeah. We'll go just about anywhere for salvation other than the Torah, won't we, or when I say salvation. All shalom, everything. But it's quite amazing that we compartmentalize whatever we want, I guess.
In this Torah passage from Bereshith, Genesis 17:10, and the one that preceded it, was Yahweh telling us that circumcision was the sign of salvation, or did he say that did he associate it with his one and only family?
It was the sign of the covenant, the family.
Right. So Yahweh seems to have his act together. He's saying that what I'm interested in is you being observant, closely examining, carefully considering what I have said, so that you can make the connections necessary to understand, and then make your commitment, sign, if you will, that you want to sign up for the covenant. And the way to sign up for the covenant is circumcision.
Yeah, make your mark on the contract.
Exactly. Make your mark. Let me know that you're serious, that you want to participate in the covenant. And then Yahweh says the following. Now, this is all after he's repeated twice that this only is valid under the auspices of being observant, of carefully considering, closely examining. And you shall cut off and separate, mul, the foreskin's association with the flesh. And this will exist as the sign to remember. The Hebrew word oath has been transliterated into English as oath. The family-oriented covenant relationship between me for the purposes of making a connection and understanding, and between you, promoting understanding for you as well.
Yeah.
So now he's telling you, in case you are wondering, what is the purpose of circumcision?
Is the mark. I mean, it's the agreement. It's the stamp.
Right. It's the sign. It's the oath of
the
covenant.
Covenant, right.
Right. It's the circumcision is the oath. It's the sign of the covenant. That's what he said. Now, did he, in the word muth, did he describe what circumcision is all about? Didn't he say that, doesn't mul mean you shall cut off and separate?
The foreskin, yeah. Yes, absolutely. It's separation. Which is the
whole goal. When Yahweh invited Abraham to participate in the covenant, weren't his first instructions to walk away from, therefore to separate oneself from?
From Ur, right.
Yeah, from your country, which was Babylon.
Right.
And from your father's home.
Exactly.
Wow.
You've got to get out from under that.
I see a connection here. You should walk away from that. You should separate.
Yeah.
Does he do this to the part of the male anatomy responsible for conceiving new life to tell you that I want to create a family that is new, that is different, that is unlike the family of your country, unlike the family of your father? This is my family.
Yeah. Pretty obvious message there. It's a non-misser.
Right.
Can't miss it.
Yeah. And my message, my family is set apart. That's what he's telling us. That's why circumcision.